Can we handle our own superpowers? Even as our technological prowess brings exponential change to the world, our ability to manage that change is stubbornly slow to keep up. Prepare yourself with these five big ideas from Superconvergence: How the Genetics, Biotech, and AI Revolutions Will Transform Our Lives, Work, and World by Jamie Metzl. Jamie was a member of the World Health Organization Expert Advisory Committee on Human Genome Editing and previously served in the U.S. National Security Council, State Department, and Senate Foreign Relations Committee, and with the United Nations in Cambodia. He's the author of Hacking Darwin, Genetic Engineering, and the Future of Humanity, and other books. Here he is to share five of his big ideas.
Hello, I'm Jamie Metzl, author of the new book, Superconvergence. And then the little print is How the Genetics, Biotech, and AI Revolutions Will Transform Our Lives, Work, and World. And I'm really thrilled to be here with you today to talk a little bit about the book, just a little bit about me. I was a member of the World Health Organization Expert Advisory Committee on Human Genome Editing, which was created after the CRISPR babies were born in China. I'm a founder and chair of the global social movement One Shared World. This is my sixth book. I'm on faculty of Singularity University, of NextMed Health. And I've really put my heart and soul into this book. And I'm really excited to share the ideas from my new book. I'll list them, and then I'll just give a little bit more detail. One is that our world is at the precipice of fundamental change. And this change is really big. And the two big changes, as I see it, are human-engineered intelligence and human re-engineered life. Putting it another way, after nearly 3.8 billion years of evolution, our one species suddenly has these godlike powers that we've imagined for our gods for all of these millennia. But now we can recast life. And the drivers of this change are compounding and accelerating with big implications for everyone. There are four times more people now than there were just 100 years ago. We're better educated, more literate, we're connected to each other. And so because of that, nobody needs to invent something that's ever been invented anyplace else. Every day, the baseline for innovation is reset. And then the technologies are converging, hence the title of the book, but every technology is embedded in every other technology. Agriculture and industrialization are embedded in the computer revolution. The computer revolution is embedded in the machine learning revolution. The machine learning revolution and AI are embedded in our ability to interrogate biological designs that have evolved over a billion years. And then using those designs, like how plants distribute nutrients in leaves, and we can actually design better computer chips that speed up everything. That's the entire point of superconvergence. It's acceleration. And because of that acceleration, when we think about change, we can't index the rate of change based on our historical experience of it, because change is accelerating. This change isn't abstract or theoretical, but it's going to show up in key areas of our lives. Certainly, healthcare. We're moving from a world of generalized healthcare based on population averages, which means when we interact with the healthcare system, we're treated because we're humans, not that we're really individuals. And that's a great way to do healthcare based on what we've done in the past. But now we're moving toward a world where we can each be treated based on who we are, really on a molecular level. And so to do that, we're going to have a lot more analytics of ourselves. And we're already starting to see that, but many people, maybe you, I certainly have had my whole genome sequenced. But in the future, it's not just that we're all going to have our whole genomes sequenced as a foundation of our electronic health records. There are going to be all kinds of biological information in these massive data sets. And the big formula of this revolution is if you have more data, better algorithms, and more computing power, we're going to be able to decipher patterns in vast pools of data that are far beyond what our unaided brains can do. And so that's going to change the way we do healthcare towards being much more precise, much more tailored toward who we are. And we're already seeing that, whether it's personalized drugs, so-called pharmacogenomics, whether it's gene therapies. Incredible woman I write about in the book, Victoria Gray, is one of the first people to be treated with gene therapy to essentially cure her sickle cell disease and fundamentally transform her life. And then the next step of the evolution of our healthcare systems is from precision to predictive and preventive, because the more data that we have and the bigger pools of data, we're going to be able to decipher patterns again, and we're going to recognize that our healthcare, in many ways our lives, exists within a range of possibility. And the goal is going to be to optimize our lives in many ways at the upper range of possibility. And maybe there are specific cases and specific areas where we can actually move beyond our innate biology. Agriculture, we're all here. Most of us are here because of modern agriculture. The reason why our population numbers have increased so radically over the last 10,000 years, and particularly over the last 100 years, is because of agriculture and then industrial agriculture. But now we have an embarrassment of riches that we've been so successful at industrial agriculture that itself is creating a lot of problems. And if we're going from 8 billion to 10 billion people and we're just going to scale up agriculture as it is, we're going to essentially wipe out all of our wild spaces. We're going to do immeasurable harm to the climate and environment, and it just can't be. So we have to keep doing what we've been doing in the past, which is increase agricultural productivity. And we have to use the tools of advanced biotechnology to do that. I know it scares people and GMOs scare people, but we should actually think of all of agriculture as a pretty aggressive form of biotechnology. Even the agriculture that indigenous people are engaged in is aggressive biotechnology. So the question is, how do we do it? How do we increase agricultural yields? How do we get away from our complete reliance on chemical fertilizers and say, well, can we manipulate microbiomes in soils and lining the roots of plants in order to boost productivity? Advanced materials, spider silk is just one example. It's stronger than Kevlar and stretchier than our stretchiest elastics, but it's really hard. We can't have communities of spiders making silk like we have silkworms, because they're cannibals and they'll eat each other. So we have all of these new ways of essentially using the tools of synthetic biology, whether it's to get E. coli bacteria to generate spider silk, or to get silkworms to generate spider silk, or to get goats to produce it in their milk. And there are all kinds of things that we can do. New models, essentially changing the way we extract natural resources from cutting down and digging up to growing. And when we think about growing, we can just harness the incredible powers of nature to grow at scale. And we look at huge forests or huge blobs of seaweed floating around the Gulf of Mexico. You can see how we can actually, working with nature, grow things at scale. Data storage, DNA is the greatest data storage mechanism in history. All of our electronic records now are essentially on magnetic tapes that can last maybe 30 to 50 years. And so we have to keep copying them over and over. And because we're creating more data every 2 years than in all of human history before those 2 years, that's a big job. But DNA can store data in the right conditions for up to 5 million years. Third idea that I talk about in the book is that these changes have the potential to help us enormously to basically get the resources that we want to live longer, healthier, more robust lives, and to build a sustainable future really for everybody. And that's the positive story. But there's a reason why we have anxiety. Anxiety is nature's way of saying, hey, there's stuff to worry about and you should be worried about. And worrying about those things actually helps us make sure that our worst fears aren't realized. If we're not careful, the same drivers could do some really fundamental harms. I was a member of the World Health Organization Expert Advisory Committee on Human Genome Editing after the Chinese CRISPR babies were born. That was an incredible abuse. I've been for the last 4.5 years at the center of the debate over COVID origins. And COVID origins, in my view, very likely is connected to a research-related incident, not intentional, an accident. But we are, regardless of that, we're at the beginning of an age of synthetic biology where we have these incredible tools that could be used for good, but they could be used in harmful ways. We have these new technologies of gene drives where we can basically eradicate malaria using basically weaponizing the tools of the genetics revolution. But if we're not careful, we could crash ecosystems. So there's a balance. And if we're just wildly optimistic, that's dangerous. If we're wildly pessimistic without recognizing the upsides, that's dangerous. And the question is, and that's the fifth big idea in the final chapter of the book, what are the things that we can do now to optimize the benefits and minimize the harms? There's a quote that I've always loved, actually, since childhood by Thoreau. If we've built castles in the air, our work need not be lost. That is where they should be. Now put the foundations under them. So the question is, how do we do it? Using another metaphor, it's celestial guidance. When we're sailing, we don't know exactly how we're going to get where we're going, but we have a destination and we recognize we're going to tack, we're going to respond to the wind and the other conditions, but we're going to get where we're going. And that's why I say over and over, this isn't a conversation about technology, but ultimately it's a conversation about values and the values that we use to guide the technology. In the book, in the final chapter, I lay out a whole framework for how to think about guiding this technology. And I've come up with a pyramid of things we can do, starting on an individual level of individual education and then public education, articulating principles, national regulation, broad scale governance. And that's really important in our WHO report. We talked about governance as being including, but beyond what governments do, UN reform. And then maybe really thinking a little bit differently about how our world is organized. I'm, as I said before, a founder of the global interdependence movement, One Shared World. And the basic idea of that is our biggest problems, pandemics, climate change, nuclear weapons, technology, governance, are global and common, but we don't have a framework for addressing that entire category of challenges. That's what One Shared World is about. And so we're going to have to articulate, well, what is that world? It's coming back to Thoreau. What does that world look like that we want to inhabit? And what is what each and all of our roles in trying to build that? Because we're seeing in front of our eyes, these technologies are growing up. We are just seeing AI systems by the day get more powerful. With the release by OpenAI of ChatGPT 4.0, AI systems suddenly got eyes and ears. It's almost like Mr. Potato Head and sticking little sense organs. And it's very, very early, but there was a time when our ancestors, who were these very simple organisms, they were able to see light, see other things. And there's an arms race pushing these technologies forward. So this is really important stuff. And it's so important, it can't and shouldn't be left to experts alone. This is a conversation about the future of humanity, the future of our species, the future of all of us, the future of all of our lives. And we need to be part of that process. And this book is my effort to help bring people into that process. I promise three ideas for what everyone can do. Number one is learn, learn, learn. We all learn the things that are in our direct line of sight. But there's so much change happening. I tell everybody you should be spending around 2 hours every day learning things not in your direct line of sight, meaning if it's in your business, you have the things that you have your direct responsibility, but there are things outside of that and your disruptions are going to come from that place. Second, AI isn't going to replace humans, but we're going to have a dynamic interaction with AI and every job is going to change. And a way of thinking about it is every job is made up of tasks. And if one of these subtasks 10 years from now will be a superhuman task, you should be spending a lot of your time doing that. If it's going to be an AI task, let the AI do that. And if it's going to be a hybrid task, we need to be dynamically negotiating what that is. And then finally, values, values, values. We've always had new technologies as humans. If we think this is about technology and we don't recognize that this is about how our core values, even our ancient values, are realized in a new domain, we're going to be in a lot of trouble. These are big, crazy, challenging times, and we all have a role in building the future we'd like to inhabit. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jamie. That was five big ideas from Super Convergence, how the genetics, biotech, and AI revolutions will transform our lives, work, and world by Jamie Metzl. I'm Michael Kovnat. Have a great day.